Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Padres B-Rider for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Giants, three games at Petco Park. Ooh, Ryan, where would you like to start? Lots going on. September.
Yeah, I'd like to start with last night and the end of last night's game. It's funny. I was all ready to talk about another sweep and to talk about how this had become sort of an inevitability, that this was a playoff team. And I was going to talk especially about their bullpen. And then Robert Suarez came in and threw hard but did not throw strikes. And with two strikes and two outs in the ninth inning, gives up a grand slam to the Tigers' nine hitter. Padres lose. Tigers take one of three here. And now there are questions about Robert Suarez as the Padres closer. As you wrote in today's Padres Daily, it's not time to be concerned, but there are things that we need to keep an eye on, notably that in the last month, Robert Suarez has not been the same pitcher he was the first 4 months of the season.
Right. And fortunately for the Padres, you know, they have Tanner Scott, right? Mm-hmm. And Tanner Scott, a lot of times now, he's a left-hander. That has to do with it. But Tanner Scott, and this happens sometimes, the eighth inning guy has been taking the top of the order or the middle of the order. I mean, my point being that Tanner Scott is fully capable, but that doesn't make it okay that Robert Suarez is struggling. What we don't know, and Mike Schilt sounds like he's answering the question, and he's not. I'm not ripping Mike Schilt. I'm saying it's what every manager would do. Is you're when we're asking in the moment, because we haven't had time to ask anybody else or see it really for ourselves, what his pitches look like, how is the life, and he's talking about it being 100. Okay, well, that's not the life. Like Robert Suarez can be up there and throw all fastballs because there's a lot of ride on his fastballs. There's a lot of movement on his fastballs. They jump, so to speak. The Padres have not a proprietary term, but a term they use that the rest of us don't. And I forget what it is at this moment. Maybe I'm not even supposed to tell you. I don't know. But it has to do with the movement of the fastball and how it comes out and appears to rise. And they believe that Robert Suarez is one of the best in the biz. Well, if he's a little bit tired, right, which he acknowledged he was at the end of last night, not necessarily speaking about the fact he'd thrown 19 pitches the night before. He's working for the fourth time in 5 days. But if he's a little tired, maybe that 101-mile-an-hour fastball is a little meatier than it would normally be. And especially on a 3-2 count where he's been missing, doesn't want to walk in a run. Like, yeah, I think it's something to look at I kind of been sounding this alarm. It was a low level alarm. It's a little more urgent now, but I kind of been sounding this alarm for a while that the reliance on the back end of the bullpen has been a little much. That is not me blaming Mike Schilt or anybody. It's that, you know what? They've had a lot of close games. And one thing I would say is Robert Suarez pitching to protect a 4-run lead just needs to not happen anymore, probably. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it was going to. It hasn't happened since August 26th. But my point is, like, that's 10 extra games Robert Suarez has done, right? Mm-hmm. And that's more than other closers, right? Like, that's something that people do now. You bring in your closer in a non-save. But I'm saying Robert Suarez has worked a lot and a lot of high-pressure situations, which is his job. But as Mike Schilt will remind us, these guys are only human.
They're only human. Robert Suarez has been especially human since August 8th. In 13 games, he has an ERA of 6.5. Opponents are hitting .294 off of him. With a .357 on base percentage, nine strikeouts and six walks from March until August 7th, March 20th to August 7th. He had an ERA of .143 and an opponent batting average of .184. Again, we could say one is a very large sample and the other is a smaller sample because it's only a month. But I think that there are some concerning things here. It was clear to me, and I'm just a guy watching on TV, Kevin, it was clear last night that he wasn't right. I mean, he came in and could not throw strikes.
He hasn't had a clean inning. Well, I shouldn't say he hasn't. I didn't do that research, which I should. But, hey, that's what you get with the benefit of hindsight. But I think you know, if you've been watching, that this is true. There haven't been very many, if any, clean innings in a while. There's a leadoff single. Guys are jumping on that fastball or something. That's what happened last night. First base runner, boom, boom. You got ambushed. Fine. Okay. But, there has not been a lot of cleanliness from Robert.
There hasn't. And even last night, whether it was it a fly ball to second base or right field, fly ball to the right side, I think it was for the second out. I mean, that was on a ball that by the time he hit it would have been ball, right? It's when he was missing, and I think for him missing big last night. Now, this is where we give some context and put this in proper perspective. Robert Suarez has done more this year than I think anybody reasonably expected of him. His ability and his availability has been a real ability this year. We had been talking for the last two or three seasons about a closer in Josh Hader who would only pitch under very certain circumstances, right? Robert Suarez is not that guy. The flip side of having a guy as available as Robert Suarez is maybe he's hitting a little bit of a wall here towards the end of the season. What is a common way to get somebody sort of to back off, especially on a reliever? We know Michael, you know, you can skip Michael King's start and that's good. How do you back off a reliever? Do you just give him a week off? What do you do?
Well, that's something that they've been doing with Robert and it just hasn't happened recently. And they're trying to win, you know, trying to win to get into the playoffs. And this is the time of year that you go for your closer and you push your guys. But yes, you back off. And fortunately, they have Tanner Scott, Jason Adam, Jeremiah Estrada, right? Now, here's the thing. Jeremiah Estrada's pitched way more than he's ever pitched, majors and minors combined in a season. Adrian Morejon has pitched more than he has ever pitched in a season combined, majors, minors. So now, here's something I've been remiss on. And early on when I noticed he wasn't pitching, it was like, okay, well, it wasn't the situations, and he's been pitching a lot lately. It makes sense, but I lost track the last couple of days that we haven't seen Brian Hoeing, okay, your middle guy. Now, I haven't looked into, like, I remember thinking during some games, hey, I wonder if Brian Hoeing's going to get up. Oh, he didn't? Okay, well, it makes sense that he wouldn't for this reason and this reason. Sure. Well, now he hasn't pitched since August 29th, I believe, in St. Louis. So are they giving Brian Hoeing some rest, all right? So they got an extra guy in the bullpen. Because of the September 1st call-ups, but like that's weird. So you're giving Brian Hoeing a little rest for something, don't know, and you're going to have to give Robert Suarez a little rest. You've got Estrada and Morejon who've pitched more than ever, and you've got this playoff race you're currently involved in, which we need to talk about, and you assume or you hope and believe you're going to be in the playoffs, so you have to have guys peaking. Woo, there's just a lot on our minds right now.
The solution and the solution to everything, Kevin, is to win by 5 runs or more.
Don't say that. That's obvious, Ryan.
As we've discussed on a previous show, they have had to lean on their high leverage guys a lot. The reason why, and by the way, they have a great bullpen. They have a last night notwithstanding. Amen. They have a great bullpen.
Yep.
The simplest way to make sure that your high leverage guys get nights off is to not need to use your high leverage guys. And that seems obvious, but I think that that's something that bears repeating. You know, not every night can be a high wire act. Not every night can be a one run win or a walk off win, simply because you do wear guys out.
And kudos. Like I have recently been thought about, and I mentioned it once in one of these things I write about the 4 run leads. That's not necessarily a criticism because guess what? The 10 times Robert Suarez has done that, that's 10 wins, folks. So they're at 80 wins. Like, way to go. It's just that's why it's the reporter's job. Sometimes the manager doesn't seem to understand that, and maybe some other people don't. But to take a 30,000-foot view and to ask questions in July that might be pertinent in September. And that's not the reporter doesn't know more than the manager. The reporter is asking that question saying, hey, I've covered this sport before and I've seen this. So could that possibly? And so I'm just saying like these are, and just like it's your job to ask questions on September 6th that could have a bearing on September 29th, which is the final game of the season. And that's really all we're doing here, right? I mean, is saying, hey, how cool is this? We got a team that leads the National League wildcard race. And there's 4 teams bunched up within 3 games. And we get to fret over the state of what might be the best bullpen in the major leagues. That's freaking awesome. We're not saying that they suck. We're saying, oh my gosh, is this good enough? What do they need to do? Like, this is what Padres fans have been robbed of. And quite honestly, the people that cover the Padres have been robbed of for most of the last 56 years, right? We get to be fretting in September.
Well, and let's talk about this. In March and April and May, you and I talked about one of Mike Schilt's, we thought, sort of refreshing and smart and really aggressive tendencies was Mike Schilt's going to win a game they have a chance to win, right?
Yep.
He's not going to take his chances. He's not going to run a guy out there. If he can use his closer, he's going to use his closer, right? Yep. He treated every game. We talked in the first weekend of the dang season. Guy treated every game like a playoff game. Pinch running, pinch hitting in April.
Right. And just, I know you mean this, but I want to clarify. Right. With the also a eye to the fact that it was a part of a long season.
Of course, yes.
But far more than what we saw out of Bob Melvin. Again, not ripping Bob Melvin, but that's what you're saying is this guy, you got a chance to win, you go.
Because we knew that this was a team that had really struggled out of the gates in recent years. Mike Schilt, it seemed to me at least, wanted to make sure that he locked up the games that they had a chance to win to give his team a chance to make the playoffs. Well, you know what, Kevin? It's September, and this team more likely than not is going to make the playoffs. And so we're talking about availability in September and time off in September because, dang it, we think that this is a team that's going to be playing in October.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The end. I mean, I think that it is totally fair and within the realm of fairness to both praise Mike Schilt in April for doing what he could to win every game that he could, and in September, wondering if maybe it's time to give these high leverage guys a break because, again, this is a team that, again, the odds all say will be playing October baseball.
Right. And yet that is 100% true. And that then also kind of being like, they got to get there. I mean, this thing has tightened up. And remember, like, the Mets are three games back. The Mets and Braves are tied for the final wild card spot. The Mets and Braves, the Braves, the Padres have the tiebreaker over. The Mets, the Padres do not have the tiebreaker over. Like, the Padres do need to play probably above 500 ball the rest of the way the Mets are going.
Right. Either the Mets need – and do we know who the Mets play down the stretch?
You know, I haven't looked at that. I know who the Padres play, Ryan. I assume there's some Braves in there, and I assume there's some Phillies in there since it's September.
Right. And if that's the case, that's probably good news for the Padres.
And I still will say this as we transition into talking about playoffs.
Yes.
That the calendar is against the teams trailing.
Yes.
But that is why, man, the games now – are what it seems some people treat the games in April and May and June and July as. Like where the feeling, heck, I have to fight it. The feeling changes based on a win or a loss. Like back, you know, it's like, hey, this team's going really good. Oh, they lost and this exposed all their weaknesses. Oh, no. Well, now, like you started at the beginning here saying that you were set to talk about another sweep and this seemed like an inevitability and then they lost. And here's the funny thing. They didn't lose ground to the Diamondbacks. They didn't lose ground to the Braves who lost, but they did lose ground to the idle Mets and they failed to gain ground. Right. And in September, man, it just feels like every win and loss. This is so awesome. The only thing I've missed really about covering the NFL is how every game felt important.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like you Sunday were, and that's what September and October baseball feels like. And we haven't had enough of that. And so I welcome this sort of like diving into like every possible thing that could go right or wrong.
Sure. The New York Mets, by the way, to wrap up their season, play the Cincinnati Reds in a 3-game series that starts tonight. They then travel to Toronto, return home to play the Phillies and the Nats, and then the Phillies again, and then at Atlanta, at Milwaukee.
Okay, so they close that with 12 straight against playoff teams Okay. And the Padres close, the Padres close big with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
Before that, have the White Sox, the Astros before that, and this trip coming up, have the Giants before the Astros. I'm going backward, which is really helpful to people. I'm working from the end of the season to the forward, and then Seattle. And then obviously this Giants. So 6 against the Giants, 2 in Seattle where, man, Seattle pitching has just owned the Padres.
Yep.
And then you've got Astros obviously going to the playoffs again. And you've got White Sox, which should be 3 wins, but you don't know what happens. Look, it's absolutely appropriate and part of the fun to talk about the schedule. Over the last couple of years, I've just learned, it's been reinforced to me, it doesn't matter who they're playing. It's about what the Padres do.
It's about what
they face this kid, Mason Black, tonight. He's making his 5th major league start. I don't know if he's going 7 shutout or if the Padres are going to score 8 runs on him in the first 2 innings. I mean,
right. Can we talk about the Giants a little bit?
I don't know much about them except their manager and that they had this rookie who was sort of threatening Jackson Merrill for a while. And they don't have any, like, this is Bob Melvin's dream team. Like, they don't play almost anybody regularly. Am I right? Like, right. It's just unbelievable.
Right. It's yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Don't they have one? Didn't Jeff Sanders tell me they have one guy who's qualified, like one batter?
Wow, really?
I could be wrong, but like when you're talking about qualifying statistics, batting average, all those, like they just don't play anybody. Now they've had a lot of injuries, and that's just kind of the way the Giants are built. But anyway, go ahead, Ryan. Sorry.
I mean, to me, this is a confounding team. They go out and make a big splash during the offseason. They sign Blake Snell, who, again, is now the Blake Snell we all remember from the end of last season. For a while, was really struggling.
Until yesterday when he threw one inning and made their bullpen cover eight innings. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Chung-Hoo Lee, who separates his shoulder trying to rob a home run. He's done for the year. Matt Chapman is kind of a last-minute addition, but now they're giving Matt Chapman Manny Machado money, signed him to an extension. A strange team. And I think this, to me, a disappointment as a franchise. They're under 500. They bring in Bob Melvin. I think that there were maybe unrealistic expectations for this team. Giants just haven't really delivered.
Yeah, and I'm embarrassed to say that, like I said, I don't know much about them. Padres haven't played them in forever.
Yeah.
And they have just – every time I get interested in the Giants, they kind of then aren't relevant anymore.
Right. They've lost seven of their last 10 heading into tonight. They can't hit. I mean, they're 20th in the big leagues and on base, 22nd in opponent average. Their bullpen ERA is bad. It's also 18th. So yeah, it's an interesting, weird sort of team there. And
I really do believe this, and, not to pump my story. But hey, what's a podcast for except to be cross media, right? I'd like to get into like why it is I believe it's about the Padres, and that's because I think they're talented, right? Mm-hmm. They can hit anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They have good pitching, and so it should be. That's where we've reached. I'm not calling them the Dodgers, but like this feels like I'm covering a good team that no matter what is happening, they're in the game, and when they're playing their game, they can beat anyone. That's based on talent. And then I just don't see them being the team that folds.
Right.
That's just – we're far enough into the season that it just – I think we know who the Padres are, and there's been a culture change, and I do believe that's relevant, and I do believe they're headed to the playoffs. Doesn't mean that I'm not like, wow, this is great, man. Go to the ballpark today. What happens with the Giants based on win or loss? Oh, it's going to be so exciting. But I don't know what your impression is, but I believe that it's a different team, and that you can't you are justified to believe that they're going to get it done.
I think, and this is might be a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. In my journalism experience, the good teams I've covered, you really don't worry about who they're playing. Good teams, there's enough to talk about and enough to think about with the team that you are covering, right? With the Padres, I think that there's enough of a sample size this year, right? They played 130 something games.
142 games. Can you believe it?
I think that it's clear that if the Padres play well, they should win most of their games. And when you're playing the Giants, if the Padres play well, they will win. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And it's such a change from, I think, even last year, where, you know, man, the Padres had a path to victory. And if they couldn't follow that path to victory, they were going to lose, right?
Yes.
This year's different.
Day was some different reason. And these reasons make sense, right? Mm-hmm. These reasons make sense. This pitcher was doing this, you know, he hit the ball well. We'd never seen him. He has good stuff. Everyone's a big leaguer, blah, blah, blah. Yes, true. Impossible to argue with.
Right.
Doesn't matter. And that's where I will always stick up for Mike Schilt and the culture change that he has brought. Because I will be honest with you and tell you that covering Mike Schilt can be a challenge. And that's not just speaking about the cliches and the not giving any information or insight, which, you know, whatever, that's neither here nor there. His job is to win. And I know that fans get frustrated as well based on some of the things that he says over and over. Here's a newsflash. It's working inside the clubhouse.
Right.
You don't hear the same things you used to hear. You don't see the same things you used to see. It's working. And so I think that he unequivocally has done a magnificent job with this team.
Joe Musgrove had a great quote, Kevin, and I will pump up Kevin's story too. It ran in Wednesday's paper. 90 inches, which in our world means it's something like 2,700 words.
I believe it was 3,000, but that's you're to be excused, Ryan, since our inch counts keep changing. But right. I think I've said 3 words an inch.
Right. So look it up on our website. Go to our app. Find
it. It reads a lot quicker. It reads like 1,800 words. Wouldn't you say, Ryan?
Yes. But give yourself 15 minutes and sit and read it. It, I think, is a fascinating look into really what has gone right for this year's Padres. And there's a quote from Joe Musgrove in there, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised because Joe Musgrove is really insightful. But he goes, you know, you hear this stuff from Mike Schilt, and you go, well, you know, I think there are a couple swears in there, as there can often be with Joe Musgrove. He goes, yeah, but the job's to win some friggin' games, right? But then you realize that all of the stuff that he preaches, if you do it right, it leads to winning games.
Yeah.
You know, that caring about each other, picking each other up, you know, there's all of those things, right? It's the old cliche, right? It's like baseball's not complicated. People are complicated, right? If you've got the people on board pulling for each other, usually that leads to good outcomes.
And if you have the talent, it does. That's a great point, Ryan. Like the game, look, it's more complicated than we give it credit for, but it's really not, right? Like everyone's playing the same game.
Right, right.
People
and
are different. You
know, whether it's, you know, whether it's high school baseball or the big leagues, you know, if you've got everybody pulling in the right direction, life's a lot easier. And it sure seems like this Padres team is pulling in the right direction, where last year it seemed like not so much.
Here's a little behind the curtain for folks who think that the only time that we talk to people is in press conferences. Sorry, that's one of my sensitive spots. I actually went to Joe on Sunday in Tampa Bay. And said, Joe, you're the last person I'm talking to for this story because I did not want to rely on your awesome quotes for this story. Right. Because that when you talk to Joe Musgrove, you're just like, that's great. I don't need to quote anybody else because he just got it and he just has such great insight. So I waited to make him like the 15th person I talked to for this story. Mm-hmm. And first quote comes out of his mouth and I throw up my hands and I go, exactly, Joe, exactly why I didn't come to you till now, because you just summed up my whole story. You nailed it. So this is a little – Joe was the second quote in my story because there's no way I was making him the first quote in my story, even though his quotes were so good. Yeah. It's like he is a dream for a beat writer. Here's why. He gets it. He's respectful. He knows the game. And most importantly, he's not a third string safety. Right. He's a star pitcher. So like none of it really is as cool because there's a lot of cool guys like Joe in that clubhouse. Mm-hmm. They're not the, you know, one of the aces of the team.
Right.
So like what's super important is that he's a really good pitcher. And then from my perspective, and I believe from fans' perspective, it should be because he's giving you insight that some other guys just won't do or are incapable of doing. He mixes being – he's the rare. He's the unicorn. He's almost Philip Rivers. I mean, he's rare.
That's the standard. Philip Rivers is the standard. Oh. And I want to touch on two quick chapters in your story. Just, again, recommend anybody who cares about the Padres read the story that ran in Wednesday's UT. One part of it was Jackson Merrill. It was sort of the idea that Jackson Merrill has now reminded this clubhouse full of sort of old pros why they play the game. You know, this is a guy who is first in at the ballpark, considers his teammates to be all of his best friends, loves playing, and more importantly, produces, right? Is you know, Bryce Miller makes the argument today he's the MVP of the team. I don't know.
Nice call him by Bryce. One of those nonsensical, why are we talking about the Padres MVP? But what a fun discussion.
What a fun discussion, right?
Right. It was really good.
Right. I thought that was good. And so if you're reading that story, look out for that chapter. And then, you know, you double back with Manny Machado. And, you know, this time last year, you were working on a different kind of story about Manny Machado and trying to address sort of what had gone wrong with this very promising season. Manny's bought in.
Yeah. And here's the thing, and I'll remind people once again, like that story was quote unquote last year, mid-September. Mm-hmm. about Manny Machado, because this team was so entwined with Manny Machado. His performance was so important. His personality is so important and dominating, and other guys had deferred to him and almost put him in a bad position where it had to be Manny's team. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Mike Schilt did and the other leaders on the team rose up and took the challenge is, why is this all on Manny?
Right.
Everybody needs to take a hand in this. This is a team. Together, everyone achieves more. I bet you Mike Schild has that plastered on his wall somewhere. Sure. But like, and so, and credit to Manny Machado, he bought in. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, and this was a part of my story, I think it was the lead to my story last year, and that's why it wasn't really just, it wasn't like about Manny, but like last year, the Padres rarely did on-field work before games. Bob Melvin didn't believe it was important. Manny Machado doesn't believe it's important. And my point has always been, it ain't important to you, Manny.
Right.
But you know what? Other guys don't wake up with, you know, more talent in their pinky finger than everybody else. That's not saying Manny doesn't work hard. Because the thing is, Manny believes it's important to be inside getting swings in the cage. Manny believes it's important to get treatment so he can play more games than anyone in the league in the past decade. That's what Manny believes is important. And dang it, that's important to Manny Machado, right? Okay, so there, I've said it, that it's not Manny's fault or responsibility necessarily to be out on the field taking grounders or working on some drill or whatever before the game. Mm-hmm. It's important to Mike Schilt. Mm-hmm. Mike Schilt believes the little things win games. Mm-hmm. Manny Machado is out on that field virtually every day that his teammates are out there doing drills. Mm-hmm. The Padres have done it far more, like exponentially more. I can't even explain to you how much more they have done that before games, the afternoon before night games this year. And Manny's out there and he says to me, yeah, it sucks. How do you do it, Manny? I know these answers because like, you got to try something new. You got to try to win a World Series, man. He is bought in from the start. Folks, do you understand how impressive that is? Like Manny Machado is on a Hall of Fame trajectory doing it Manny Machado's way. Always supported that. Always thought, yes, I've been around Hall of Fame players. You do it your way. And he said here in year 13, whatever it is, I'm going to change this part to be a good teammate and to be a leader. I just think that might sound simple. You know why it sounds simple? Because the rest of us aren't on a Hall of Fame trajectory.
Well, and it speaks to a point that you made in your story and you told me about last February when you were in Peoria. The trade-off is, right, these guys will go do pregame work. They will go do this stuff with Mike Schilt. Mike Schilt does not waste a second of their time. This is not standing around shagging flies.
It's not Little League stuff, right? Yeah. Right,
yeah, this is intentional, quick, efficient stuff. I mean, you told me, I think, a story about, Peoria in February where they go out to do drills and there's seven coaches all doing something different all at the same time. And it's like, quick, 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 get it done, then get off your feet.
Yep. Right? Yep. There you go. And last year, and this is again, not just last year, all years, that's 25 minutes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Players love that.
Right.
Especially when they feel they're getting better and the work is actually working.
Right. No, I got you. I got you. It's crazy. Three-game series, Padres, Giants. Starting tonight, we're not going to get into too much of the pitching stuff. Black versus King. Tonight, you get into Logan Webb versus Dylan Cease. Logan Webb, very good. Very, very good.
That's a good matchup. That's the kind of matchup you go out to see right there.
Yep. On Saturday. And then Sunday is, I know this, Kevin, Joe Musgrove versus TBD.
Yeah, you know TBD.
TBD is tough. TBD shoves sometimes.
Has always been a little rough on the Padres.
Certainly has. Right. Bullpen games are not great for them. Guys making their like first or second big league start, not good on the Padres typically either. So a big three-game series. But like we said, you know, it's less about who they're playing and more about how they're playing here in the final month of the season. Kevin, I'm going to put you on the spot one more time. You just mentioned Joe Musgrove being a good quote, a great guy to talk to in the Kevin AC annals of covering sports. If Philip Rivers is the standard, who's in the top, say, three?
Eric Weddle.
Okay.
And Joe Musgrove.
Okay.
And Will Myers.
Will Myers.
Yes. Got it. It was important to him. Jackson Merrill can grow into it.
Okay.
He's 21 years old, for goodness sake.
Oh, no.
Philip would have been the only one at 21 that I still would say was probably there. But and I couldn't stress enough. I could give a symposium on why that is. We don't have enough time here. It's not just that they were good quotes. It's that they had thick skin. Mm-hmm. It's that they knew what your job was. You weren't friends, necessarily, but it was respectful. And they were good. I'm not going to throw in that's why I always use the second string safety. You covered football for a long time. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Like the second string safety or the middle reliever, that sure. guy is virtually always a great talker and just a great dude that you can just chat with forever.
Sure.
And fans don't care.
Right. Position coaches. Nobody cares that the linebackers coach is a good quote, right? Like they just don't. Yeah. It's interesting. And what I think those three guys all have in common, and maybe all elite athletes do, but I think of Eric Weddle as being maybe the most supremely confident human being in the world. Phillip Rivers was all shucksy, but Phillip Rivers thought he was better than everybody he played when he played him. Right. And then you look at Will Myers, maybe a little different, but I think Will Myers believed in himself.
Believed in himself for sure. But also very realistic about himself.
Yeah.
And you know, a different trajectory than say what we think Jackson Merrill's on perhaps, but hey, people thought that about Will Myers, but I mean, there's differences, and a different trajectory than, you know, the two Pro Bowlers and, you know, really good players. But Will Myers, they're just, look, it always has something to do with their life experiences and how they were raised and the kind of people they are. And look, I love covering Manny Machado. This is not to say that I didn't love covering other people. You asked me who were the best quotes, and right. my best quotes, just like that's jargon that, because look, Marty Schottenheimer was a good quote too, but like, right. all right. Best quote is a what newspaper or journalist jargon that encompasses a lot of things, and that's mm-hmm. insightful. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, good quotes, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's just a good person to work with. It's like this blanket. I can't think of another industry what that would be, but that it is. He's just a good person to work with.
Well, now and I have to go.
The requirement, if I'm going to put you in the best quote All-Star game, is that you have to also be an All-Star.
Yeah, right. You got to be good. You got to be good. Absolutely. Well, now I have to go watch the Phillip Rivers mic'd up stuff. Remember that? Just talking smack.
Sometimes I'll come across, because obviously our conversations, which are the most cherished by me, I wasn't recording. So, sure. But I'll sometimes come across a video of like press conferences. Go and watch one, and I'll try to send it to you, Ryan. One day someone asked him a question, and it was the greatest example of who Phillip Rivers was, not just to me. Now, I think there was another, like, you know, I covered the team that every year that he was their starting quarterback, but like to every single reporter, so respectful. Someone asked a question. I can't remember if it was like a question that was nonsensical or if it was a totally valid question that Phillip just didn't want to answer. Mm-hmm. He spent 45 seconds not answering, trying to answer their question without answering their question because he right. thought it might hurt the team if he answered the question. Or I can't remember if it was that because he did that a lot, or if this example I'm going to send you is that it was kind of a nonsensical question, right. but he wanted to show them so much respect. He didn't know how to answer it, and he wasn't going to put them on the spot. So he spent 45 seconds dealing with this question. I mean, just phenomenal stuff.
Love that. Love that. Love that. Miss Phillip Rivers.
Joe will do that as well. I mean, there's not a question that you'll get from Joe or that you'll ask of Joe that he'll go, and look, sometimes we all ask questions. We go, as soon as it's coming out of your mouth, you go, okay, either that was awkward, dumb, or dang it, I should have known that answer. Or like, no, because we ask questions we know the answers to because we need their quotes. But and Joe will never treat even the TV cameraman who has not been out there for 3 months asking a question that is in the media guide, he will never treat that person as if that question was anything other than Mensa level.
Right. Hey, Joe, I heard you grew up in San Diego.
Yes, exactly.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Went to Grossmont High. You know, yeah, my family's still here. And it could have also been the third time he was asked it. Like...
Joe, your parents own a coffee shop, I heard? Yeah. Tell me about that.
Anyway. Yep, and he spent 5 minutes telling them about it. Yep.
Padres-Giants 3-game series starting Friday night at Petco Park. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.